Say What? Say What radio show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
Welcome to the Say What show. This is being recorded on December 9th, 2025. It's a special presentation. Why? Well, because Jan and Ani are not here, nor will they be here for a while. It broke their hearts, but we had to get real. They had to get real. There's not enough, well, time has gotten slower, so there's not enough time in the day to do what they need to do. Because not only do they have to keep up with current events and keep engaged in what's happening in the 3D world, but they have their own livelihood to work on, because that's how they survive. So they just didn't have the time to put into it to make it a really good show. So they'll be back, but I don't know, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, I don't know. But in the interim, when they told me this, I considered just canceling the show, but I couldn't do it. I've been at this for, well, I've been doing radio since 2014. So it's well over 11 years, and this is the oldest show. It was the first show that I did on my own. I mean, I had all these other people with me, but this was my creation. In all this time, I think maybe there's been maybe a half a dozen times where we did not do a show, and they were live. So it's kind of ingrained in me as part of my life. I want to continue doing a presentation that will help people understand the reality that we live in, which I call cosmic reality. I wrote a book about it. And the book I approached as telling stories. I didn't want to just say, oh, it's this way and this way and this way. I wanted to be able to tell people how I got to those positions in a learning research kind of way. Okay, so I want to start, we'll call this chapter one, because why? Well, Ani and Jan decided that I should write a book, and I said, well, I don't really have time to write the book. I do it through podcasting. And then I realized that if I record on Zoom, which I'm doing, Zoom will also make a transcript. So what I'm doing here is kind of like writing that book, but making an audio book out of it before it ever goes into print. It's a strange way of writing a book, but hey, it might work. I'm going to tell you a lot of woo-woo stories. I'm not going to tell you about, I'll tell you some of the dark side things because they are integral to who I've become. And I'm 77 years old. I've been at this business, the business of life, for all that time. I have learned so much. I mean, I really have had a very interesting and profound life. So I want to share that with you, but I don't want to share it with you thinking it's coming from my ego. No, I feel like I'm a pathfinder, that I was given the mission when I came here as a soul that's manifesting this body, Nancy Hopkins. And it's the idea that because of my unique family life when I was growing up and the experiences that I've had, I've become very knowledgeable in metaphysics and in science. And by kind of putting these together in my head, I've come up with an understanding of at least a slice of reality that if I'm as happy as I am after all these years, if I've been as lucky, if I've been so lucky, I've been blessed, I feel like I'm being protected. And that's what I want to share with you guys. So I'm thinking about this, I'm putting it together in my head and everything. And we do Cosmic Soup, Mark, Joseph, and Callis and I. And Mark says, what about this interview we can talk about, which was with Whitley Strieber and Dr. Dean Radden. Now, we did the show Cosmic Soup, and you can listen to it. It's really, really interesting. I guess it will be December 2nd date. It's the last one we did. Well, Radden is somebody who is a scientist that. Genetic scientist. He studies the genes and DNA. And he and his team got interested in looking at what makes a psychic. Is there something in their genes? Because once in a while, you find, well, quite a bit, you'll find somebody that is a psychic that may have had a grandmother or a mother or a father, but mostly it seems to fall on the women. In their past, in their genetics. Well, I was surprised at the conclusion they made, but then when I thought about it, I said, no, I'm not surprised at all. Because what they found is that, except for very rare cases, there does not seem to be a connection between your genetics and your ability to become a, in quotes, psychic. So what does that mean? Well, I looked at it, I thought about it, and I said, well, first off, the real damage done to society that put the concepts of magic, and magic is the manipulation of energy. And psychic abilities, where they would say, oh, no, there's no such thing, no such thing. Where did that come from? And they point it out there. Radden points it out. It's the Inquisition. Prior to the Inquisition, which is when the Roman Catholic Church decided there were witches and that they were going to find them and they were going to burn them, they were going to destroy them. Evil, awful, terrible things. And they killed hundreds, maybe thousands of people. Well, if you look at that, you say, okay, so the society was ingrained with the concept that if you do these things, you're a bad person, you're evil. We gotta shut you down. So, no. And it grew into a silence of, oh, that doesn't exist. Well, it does exist, it's very real. And prior to the Inquisition, it was part of all native societies, native by the fact that they're not conquered by somebody else. They grew up in this area and they have a a connection with nature, a connection with abilities that people could nurture in an environment that says, yes, these are real. But they took that away from us. So we're confronting this concept that no, people that have these powers, something's wrong with them. They're dealing with the devil or, they're just crazy people. I was named crazy people. So, okay. So how do we make a change to that? Well, you have it when you have people like me or Derek Condon or thousands of others. Gene, the tarot reader, without Whitley Strieber himself. I mean, people that say, no, this is happening to me and it's real. So gradually that's been, let's say, not dominating yet, but having a massive influence in the way that people look at people like me. Okay. So My life is full of very strange stories. I want to take you down that road. Not because I want to say how wonderful I am. Believe me, I feel blessed that I was given this mission to go through these experiences to share them with you guys. So let's start at the beginning. What set my life up to be able to essentially believe from the get-go that there are spirits? Well, I think that that comes from the Roman Catholic Church. Well, my mother grew up a Catholic. When my dad wanted to marry her, I don't know if it was a law or tradition, but he had to convert to Catholicism, which he did. So we were brought up in a Catholic church. Now, what are you being taught? Because the schools were just teaching you reading, writing, and arithmetic. They weren't trying to influence you. So it's your family life. I never had a television in that house until I was 12. Mom never listened to the radio. So there was a lot of silence. Okay. But the older I got, the more I was amazed at my mother. My dad had a job that took him on the road all the time. And he wasn't there for most of the time. So my mom is with these kids. And it sort of turned into two families. Myself, my brother Phil, Jim, Mary, and Billy. Okay. We were brought up when Dad was struggling to get his own business going. And we didn't have a lot of money. Which is okay. No money. But it did put a strain on my mom. I could tell stories about it, but, you know, not necessary. She's like so many, many, many moms that struggle but do everything they can do not to let the kids know. That was my mom. Okay. But the thing here, the key thing here, is that because we grew up in that kind of an environment where there was no direct parental control, and we had come from New York State where the rest of the family was, so there wasn't any lot of family at the kid, right? On top of that, we moved into an area that I think had been built right after World War II when all these soldiers came back and they were given the VA loan ability so they could get a house, where all these houses were built and basically the same blueprint. So it was that kind of a neighborhood. And I think probably maybe 50 people had houses there, maybe. Maybe more, maybe a little less, but about that. But on Carey Lane, there was like 12 houses. All of them had children. Well, the ones across the street, they were old. They were my age, at least. And they had, I don't even know if they had children. I never saw their children, adults, as a kid. I just interacted with them. But everybody else had kids. So we would get up and we'd go outside. And this group of kids would go from yard to yard. Now, ours was the most popular place, yes, but we'd go other places. So whosoever yard the kids were in, that's the adult supervision. Somebody gets hurt, they're the first responders type of thing. So we were absolutely free to do whatever we wanted to do if we didn't get caught doing something. Like, there was a swamp right behind the residential area. And we weren't to go to the swamp because it was full of water, drowning. I don't know. It was never very deep. So I don't know if anybody would have drowned in it. However, that was the rule. That was about the only rule. And that you came back at dinner time. Good. I mean, we come in at lunch and, that sort of thing. So we grew up in the sandbox. We were free thinkers. We weren't told how to think except for the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is a weird place to grow up in as a kid because you're continually being fed this concept that Jesus was the Son of God and came to earth for our sins to be forgiven. A lot of that I didn't get, honestly. But you were indoctrinated with the concept that there's angels, there's heaven, there's hell. It was a spiritual universe that we didn't see with our eyes. We heard it, and because everybody around us believed in it. So by growing up in a sandbox and having nobody really tell you what to do except the church, I was programmed to think that there's much more to reality than what we actually are dealing with. Okay. So my mom also had the habit of taking us to the library every week. We didn't, like I say, we didn't have radio, we didn't have TV, we had books. And we would read these books. You get a couple of books and and you could read them in a week. And that's what we did. So the books are teaching us to think in terms of words, to think in terms of stories, to think in terms of if this happens, that happens, and so on and so on. But the most important thing I think it gives us is imagination. When I was a kid, I'd get reading these books, and I was in a different world. It was the world of the book. And for the entire time I'm reading the book, I'm in that world. And then I get another one. And I go into that world. And so on and so on. Now they play video games. It's not the same thing. I don't think. I don't play video games, but I don't think it'd be the same thing. Because in a video game, somebody's dictating what you're seeing. Well, that happens in a book too. Yes, except it's telling you what to imagine. In the book, it's giving you a scenario that you're free to see in any way you want. You're free to see the characters any way you want, to hear the story or read the story and take it to, well, what if this happened or what if that happened? What it did was it instilled in me and all my siblings this concept of imagination. If you can imagine it, it can be true. So I want to take you into the stories, but I also want to kind of embellish the stories with what I think it means in the tapestry of life, because life is a tapestry. Something that happens years ago all of a sudden become important. And at the time, you had no idea about this. And when it shows up, you go, oh, that's what that was all about. So I'm hoping you're going to have a good time with this. I'm hoping I have a good time with this. I'm not preparing other than thinking about what happened and taking notes, because a lot of this stuff I know I don't recall it until somebody says something to me, and then I go, oh, I've got a story. So, but I want to present you the stories kind of. I'm going to start out chronologically. How did they start? Because again, I wasn't, except for the Catholic Church saying that this is all possible, I wasn't seeing TV. I wasn't seeing the things that keep your mind kind of in a focus on reality that is yours because you're reading those books. You're making it up. Nobody's telling you what it's supposed to be. And I used to like to go out by myself into the woods that surrounded our property, the whole real estate area. And I just go out there by myself. And I would build little lean-tos, little houses. I was always building these little thingies. And I just felt like I was where I should be. It was very, I just loved it. So one day I'm running through the woods. I mean, that high that a runner gets. Well, that's what I think I was doing to myself. I was running for so fast, so long that I was really in that runner's zone of ooh, 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 little ooh in of itself. And all of a sudden, I realized that instead of being like, and I think I was about 8 years old, now, I'm not in an 8-year-old body anymore. I'm in the body of what I saw as a child as an Indian male, young male, 20s maybe. But that was the image. I mean, I looked down and I was like, whoa, 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 what happened to my body? But I never stopped running. And it was all I can tell you at the time was that that's what happened. I didn't try to manipulate what was happening. I was having a good time. And I just happened to be running in another body. Oh, it didn't stop me from running. In fact, I didn't get out of that body until we ran out of woods. And as soon as we get into this clear area, which probably was still woods in the time of the Native American, but it wasn't there now, the woods. And so in his mind, he's probably still running. But in my mind, something snapped and I was back in my little girl body. Because of the way we were living, I didn't go to somebody and say, oh, I just had a weird thing happen to me. I didn't actually think it was weird, which is weird. It just happened. Now I think that it was a reincarnation, remote viewing situation combined. That the little girl got in the same kind of energy space that this Native American was, and their soul was in both of them. And what happened was that for whatever reason, the little girl became aware of this weird, she wasn't in the same place she had been. She was now in a different reality. We'll get into all of that. Why? What are you talking about? I mean, most people that have been listening to me, they have a understanding of what I'm talking about. But so it's your soul, that soul that keeps living after one life after another. That memory is there. That consciousness is there. That's what you're working with. When John Locke said, he was an English philosopher, let's say, that the human mind is like a blank book. The pages have nothing written on them when they're born. He's wrong. I didn't know that until I'm telling you right now, because I always thought that was a good image of how life was, a blank book when you're born. Somehow or another, and I don't know the mechanism of it, we have the ability to access the book. What we're looking at when we're born is a chapter. We're not looking at the whole book. But it's our God-given right to be able to access the book and to have it recall experiences that you had in other chapters. That's what I think happens. But that was, to me, looking back at it, it was that situation, that it was the first time in my life that I had a memory of a past lifetime. Okay. So there was nobody talking woo-woo about any of this stuff. This was, I didn't have any input of this, okay? So it gets to be November 23rd, 22nd, on 1963. I'm in high school. I'm 15 years old. We had gotten out of school. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Why so early? We were on double sessions. The local elementary school had burned down, so we had this weird situation where we were going in the morning and then there was another whole group of people going in the afternoon. So I went home and changed my clothes, and then I was going out the kitchen door. Mom said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going over to see Lois." Lois lived 2 houses away. We were the same age. We'd gone through all the same schools. We were best friends. I walk in the back door. Nobody's home except her. And I walked in the back door and I yelled, "Hey, where are you?" And from the upstairs, she says, "I'm up here." So I said, "Okay." And I am in the kitchen. And they always had a radio on. So the radio is playing. I walk in to get to the stairs to go to the second floor. I had to go through like a dining room and then the living room, and the stairs were off the living room. I'm crossing in to the dining room when all of a sudden everything got real heavy. The atmosphere got like really, really heavy. It was like I was walking in water. Slow motion. And I suddenly, it was silence. I mean, in my head, there was silence, but I'm just trying to figure out what's happening to me. And, I didn't know about health issues and any of that. That's not where my head went. It was just, what's happening to me? And in the distance, I hear a sound. So I start focusing on the sound. And then I realized it was the radio. I was listening to the radio. And this guy is saying something about something. I at first I was like, didn't have any idea what he was talking about. But then he said, "Yes, it's been confirmed. President Kennedy has been shot and he's dead." I can't tell you. I was a fan of his. I grew up in Massachusetts. They were like royalty in my head, in the heads of all my generation. It was just a wonderful, wonderful thing that was happening out there, Camelot. And now you just told me he'd been shot and killed. But I keep walking. And now I get in the living room and Lois comes down from upstairs and she's got a weird look in her eyes. I hadn't said anything, but maybe she felt something too. And she said, "What's happening?" And I said, "They just killed the president." And I turned around and I walked back all the way through the house and back home. And I had to walk up the porch and then I walked into the kitchen and Mom's there. Basically, doing dishes where I left her. And she looked at me, and she also had a strange look on her face. And she said to me, "I thought you went to Lois's." And I said to her, "The president's been shot. He's dead." I kept walking. I walked through the house. It's weird. I'm so focused on it. I'm doing kind of a remote view while I'm telling you the story, and I'm getting very emotional. So I walked down the hall and I walked into the den, which also was the TV room. And I turned on the television. Now remember, I'm 15. We've had the television for a few years now. And at the time, you only had three channels. So whatever was on, I just sat down. They were announcing it. It was Cronkite. It was on. And for the next 3 days, I virtually never left that room except to eat, go to the bathroom. But I kept getting up because what I noticed there was that if you're on like the first one, I think it was ABC, CBS, NBC, I don't know, but if you're on the first channel, eventually it'll kind of start repeating the same information. So then I'd get up and I'd turn it to the next channel, and then eventually that would do the same thing, and then I turn that back to the third one, and back to the first one again, and that's the only movement I was doing is getting up and changing the channel. 3 days. And on the third day, they buried the president. It was that 3 days of my life has dominated my life. I went on to essentially research the Kennedy assassination because I knew they were lying to us. I had seen by paying attention that long, I did. I saw something that probably other, well, I'm sure other people saw it, but nobody ever made the connection of it. They were the camera team, this particular one, was outside the Bethesda hospital where the president's body was being taken for an autopsy. They had flown him out of Dallas and were bringing him. He was already at the DC airport, and they were bringing him by ambulance to the hospital. So the camera's there waiting for this to happen. And the two guys are talking to one after the other. And one of them gets real excited. He says, "Oh, there's an ambulance coming in. An ambulance coming in. Is this it?" Well, no, it wasn't. But the weird thing was, is they took off of that ambulance, what they call a cargo coffin. It's a metal coffin. And they brought it in a back side door. So there was the driver of the ambulance and another guy that took this coffin and brought it into the side door of Bethesda. And these guys are going, what's that about? They're talking about it. Now, it was only that one time on one station that I saw that. But if I hadn't been sitting there for 3 days, that was probably the only thing I needed to see. There was another coffin that got to the hospital just before Kennedy's body. I'm not sure if Kennedy was in the coffin because the body they had just brought in was, in fact, the body of John Kennedy. They swapped out the two bodies, and during the autopsy, two FBI agents were later to relate it. It never got into official documents. When they opened up the coffin and put the, it was wrapped in a sheet, the body. When they uncovered the head, pieces of bone fell out. Sorry about the graphics. And the major, there were all doctors there, admirals and stuff like this, but only one of them was a forensic, meaning looked at dead bodies, doctor. And that was Hughes. His name was Dr. Hughes. So he goes, this looks like this body's already been autopsied. But they go through the autopsy and you get official records and Humes writes them, then he changes them, and it was bizarre, that whole story. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is because I was talking about John Kennedy. I hadn't even thought about this connection, okay? The FBI agents that saw and heard about this being a second autopsy, years later, a couple of years later, not even quite, they were interviewed by, I think it was a Chicago newspaper. And in it, I didn't even know FBI people were there initially. And in it, they made the statement that it looked like the body had already been autopsied. So with that fact in my mind, I go into this bookstore. And it was the only bookstore that I went into. I mean, it was my bookstore. And as I walked in, there was a book, a hardcover book, expensive. And it was Best Evidence by David Lifton. I had to have that book. I mean, it was like, get that book, get that book, get that book. Well, it was what I consider the most important book written on the Kennedy assassination, because he believed that the best evidence in what happened was the body. And this entire book takes apart all the lies and gives you the actual scenario, as crazy as it is. Two bodies? But he makes his point. But the most important reason that I believed what he was saying was because as a kid, I had seen the second coffin. There was a lot of time. This was 20 years later. That piece of information that I never forgot, two coffins, became critical in my understanding of what really happened with the assassination. Okay. These quirky little time things that happen, where something happens to you, but it doesn't make sense until 20, 40, 50 years down the pike. That's an example of the tapestry of life. Every single thing that we encounter makes us who we are. Everything. It's a tapestry. I think what happens to people is that they have these episodes, but you have to really look at what is happening around you, what you're engaging in, the experiences, and to question, to know that you're so important that you've got to remember certain things. Most people, they don't have a feeling of a oneness, of a sovereignty, that they're somebody special. So things that happen to them are not important. And they don't remember them. They're taught many, many times, many lessons, but they don't get it because they're not paying attention. And if I want to give you any secret, pay attention. Okay? That, just pay attention. You are that important. It's something that you just disregard normally or have. Don't stop. Is this important? And you'll know if it is or not. Why? Because we're only a chapter in that life of the soul. We have access to memory. We can remember. But something has to prompt us to remember. So I get into these weird situations and I go, is this right or is this wrong? Did this happen? Because it wasn't understanding what I just said to you. It was this feeling that if it's important, I should pay attention to it and I should remember it. Okay, so that's one of the main secrets that I can pass on to you is pay attention to the tapestry of life. And as you get older, an older person is going to understand this a lot better than a young person. But as you get older, that's what it is. And if you realize it earlier in life, it'll help you pay attention to what's happening. Okay. So let's go back to my experience when the Kennedy thing was announced to me. Well, why did I have that weird experience? Why did the two people that I saw right after it also have these kind of weird, shocky faces? I think there was a major timeline change. Now, what's a timeline? A timeline, space and place. We are the space. The place is different for every single person. So you go through and you sort of like get an idea of what's real. And those people that also have the similar idea, you as energy bodies are vibrating at a common frequency, let's say. You see a reality that is very similar. None of it's identical, but very similar. Well, as you focus on that place, you essentially are creating a timeline based on the reality that you think is there with all these other people. That's a timeline. But you've got all these other categories of how people look at things. Somebody in, Egypt is going to look at life different than we do as Americans. So those people that are resonating, vibrating together on the same perception of reality, they're creating their own little timeline. Now, if these two timelines are very similar, except for the specifics of it, they have a commonality of vibration. They also come together. So these two timelines kind of sync together. Now, if something happens of the magnitude of the Kennedy assassination, you shook up everybody's reality. So I think that what we experienced, my mother, Lois, myself, probably everybody else in the world, was this momentary shakeup of the timelines, of the reality. I can tell you that for the 3 days I was in there, I don't ever remember seeing my father. But my mother would come in any chance she had. We never said a word to each other. Never. Or she'd say, I gotta go make dinner. But that was it. I mean, it wasn't, we weren't talking about what was happening. Why? Because they couldn't figure it out. What I had gone through as a 15-year-old, my mom had gone through as a 25-year-old, which she's a little older than that, probably 30. So that's why you have these different timelines, these different realities. I hope I made that kind of clear. As I go through the stories, I have to talk about them a lot because it really is one of the foundations of cosmic reality. All right, so we've gotten through that. Now let me look at my notes. Okay, this is another really, really wild one. When I was 16, I had a job in a grocery store. Then I got fired from when they was became a new manager. We didn't get along. So I, our next door neighbor worked in a strange place. It was called the laundry. And they would take uniforms from different businesses, pick them up dirty and wash them and then bring them back to the laundry. And they needed help there. So I just started up in the middle of that summer, 16 years old, with this in this laundry. And there's so many stories I could tell you about that, but we're doing woo-woo stories, so let's stay on the woo-woo. Well, there was these two sisters, Mary and Aggie, and Mary got another job, better job. But Aggie and I would go out to lunch. Every once in a while, we'd go out to lunch. And this one day, it was a Friday, we went for pizza. And as we're eating this pizza, Aggie, for some reason, decided to tell me a ghost story. Now, this is actually what she had lived through. I didn't believe in ghosts. I had no reason to believe in ghosts. I mean, I didn't even think about ghosts. It was something that happened on the cartoons and on Halloween. That was about it. I'm going to tell you the story, but I'm also going to preface it with this. The story was so insanely crazy that I didn't really believe her. I knew she believed it, but I didn't really believe her. So I told her, I said, I'm going to go pick your sister up from work at the end of our shift. And I'm going to ask her about this story. And Aggie was, yeah, go ahead, go ahead, go ahead. Yeah. Which I did. And Mary confirmed everything that Aggie had said. So I'm going to tell you the story. I wrote a short story about it and I called it The Valley because they would never tell me the address of this farm that they moved into for obvious reasons that you'll get into. But you had to drive down this dirt road, and then there was, you went through some forests, and then there was this little valley, and it had a running creek, and I think, like, yeah, like a pond thing there. And this house, it was very old, wooden. So they're there for, I don't know how many years, but it was probably a couple of years. When their father decided he wanted to dig the, what's the cellar, which had a dirt floor, and he wanted to dig it open, dig down so we could, there'd be another space for him, you know, another, he's going to make it into a basement, but a finished basement, that type of thing. So he goes down there and he starts digging. And he hadn't gone very far before he dug up some human bone. So, what do you do when you just dug up some human bone that's been there for God only knows how long? Do you call the authorities? Well, at that time, remember, a bunch of bones is not going to tell you anything. But also, do you want all the hassle? And, you know, who in the hell knows what it is or anything, you know? So he just filled it I'll think about this later. It was right after that that weird things started happening in the house. And forgive me, it's been, you know, 50, 60 years since I heard the story, and I'm really just recalling what I re remember. So I might be out of sync into how it happened, you know, the chronologicals of it. But one of the things that there were a few things that were very, very physical. It seems like the first thing that happened was the water. Now they're on a well, but the water suddenly turned like it looked like blood coming out of the faucet. And Mrs. Parkett, she, I'm, I was later to meet her, and she's the whole part of the story. But nobody knew what it was. I mean, they didn't. It looked like blood. And it finally stopped. It was, it was like they didn't even turn off the faucet because they didn't want to get near it. They didn't know what it was. And then it stopped. And then water was flowing through it again. That seems to be the first thing that I remember them telling me. Well, then they had a weird kind of, it was like a ventilation shaft from the first floor to the second floor. And one of the boys, because they had one, two, three, I think they had five in the family. And I met the three girls and I met one of the brothers. But the youngest one, he used to go from the top floor to this down to the second floor by sliding down this shaft. And so he's doing it, and the thing came in and stopped him. It wasn't big enough anymore. And he was screaming and hollering, and they couldn't get him out. I mean, I don't even remember if they told me how they got him out because I've got this thing in my head and I'm going like, what in the hell? Remember, oh, this is brand new to me, all these stories. But both girls said, yeah, it happened. All right. There were a whole lot of other weirdness that I'm not even going to get into. I'll just give kind of little categories of it. I mean, I actually wrote a short story because there was so much to it. They would sometimes hear chanting, very kind of like melodic singing chanting coming down, well, coming from where the area of the pond was. One day, Mary was going down the stairs to the cellar. Well, it was not, they didn't go down the cellar. On the side of the stairs, there were pantry kind of things. And that's what she was doing. She was getting a can of something or a jar probably then. And so she's getting it, but then she notices that there's a hole in the wall between this pantry stairwell and the kitchen. And she had never noticed it before. So she looks through it. And when she looked through it, the kitchen was totally different. It did not have a linoleum floor, it had a wood floor. It did not have a, modern refrigerator and things. It had an old furnace, like a pot belly thing that, they put the fire in type thing. I mean, that kind of an oven. The table was different. And so she was so freaked out. She ran back to the top of the stairs and looked at the kitchen. And it was the kitchen that she knew. And she went back down and she looked again. It was the same thing. People would drive down to the, down the dirt road into the house and stuff to pick them up or whatever. They hardly ever had anybody come into well, they did have people, friends that would come to the house. But then one day they were all in the living room and there was a window that, and the other side of the window was a porch. So they're in there and they suddenly see a cigarette. They didn't see any person, but they saw a cigarette. And you could see somebody was, taking a toke off of it, and you'd see it light up a little more. And they look around and they go, well, who the hell's out there? We're all in here. So the guy that was closest to the door, he got up and he looked out there and he said, oh my God, there's nobody here. And yet from the inside, they could still see the cigarette. People that came down there would often have a car problem. There was a few times they had to actually tow them out of there. And when they get them away from the property, the car would be fine. Mary one day woke up. She was fast asleep and she woke up. And she was having this nightmare, but then she realized, no, the nightmare is real. Somebody's trying to strangle me. And when she opened her eyes, it was her sister, Annie. And Mary was kind of like was screaming and hollering and finally woke up Annie. She was asleep. But she'd almost tried to kill her sister. There were other things that were happening that by this time the husband's gone. Okay, he left. And Mrs. Parkett had all these kids, and all of this really bad haunted house thing was happening. So she essentially abandoned the property. And they moved into an apartment, very small. And that's where I met him. That's what had happened. This whole story I just told you, they had just gotten out of it a few months before that. So they tell me the stories, and I asked them, I said, can I meet your mother? So they take me over and they introduce me to her. She was, the word comes angelic. She was just one of those people that as soon as you met her, you kind of loved her. And she saw something in me that led her to tell me stories the kids didn't know. And I'm not even going to tell you because they're not pertinent for what I'm trying to teach you right now. But I had a very, very deep connection to her. So we remained friends, and then I went off to college. And my first year of college, I got a message from Angie saying that her mom had died. So this was at Christmas time. So as soon as I get home from school, University of Massachusetts, I connect with her and I go and I see her. And she said that her mother apparently died of cancer. She was in the hospital. She was in hospice type of situation, and it was Christmas Eve. And the kids were at home, and they got the call that she had passed. But before they got the call, there was a knock at the door. It was snowing out. There was a knock on the door, and they opened it up, and there was nobody there. But there were footprints on the porch, but not on the stairs. And then, as they're trying to figure out what's this about, they got the call that Mrs. Parkett had passed. So those kids believed that that was their mom at the door. I never kept up with them after that. It was just life gets in the way, but I can say that and know also that sometimes these things happen in life. They just happen. You don't need to have that experience. There's nothing else you're going to learn from these people. So I've always hoped that they had just a really good life, and that the demonic spirits that were still showing there, because when they moved into the new place, things were still happening. I think that Mrs. Parkett felt safe telling me stories, because she wouldn't tell her own children. And I think that that's part of the pattern that you see out there, where some people will just suddenly tell you things they've never told anybody else. Because their one of their roles in life is to tell you that. So anyway, that was let's say mind bending. It opened me up to a totally different, I mean, because after that I started studying ghosts, and demons. And just this one, this other story just came to my mind. I can't, Warrens, the Warrens, Mr. and Mrs. I forget what their name, Lorraine's one and Ed, I think it was Ed and Lorraine Warren. They got involved with house, land clearing and house clearing. And essentially got into exorcism and aspects of exorcism. They also had a collection of all sorts of demonic associated, like dolls that are supposedly possessed and stuff. And they would take these things because the energy, the evil energy that was in them was something that you can't really destroy. You can't destroy energy. You can only transmute it. So it might get into another object, but they knew it was here. It was contained. So they had this collection. And they write this book. I don't remember. I don't remember the name of it. Demonologist, maybe. I'm not sure. So I didn't really know about them, but I could see by the book it was, something about, evil spirits and demons, and this will be interesting, this couple, I mean, basics. And I sit down to read it. And I open up the cover and I started to read, and all of a sudden, somebody slapped me in the face so hard, my head absolutely twisted. I mean, it was like, what? And I had a red mark on my face. What the hell is that? But by then, I knew enough about demons and evil spirits and this sort of thing to realize that I just might have gotten zapped by one of these critters. Why? They don't want me reading this. They don't want me to know this information. And I'm the kind of person that if you challenge me like that, oh, damn straight, get out of my mind, get out of my way. I just, it's part of my makeup. And so I was like, oh, you think so? If I knew the full implication of the powers of them, I might have reconsidered. But at the time, no, you pissed me off. I'm going to read this book. So I did. And that opened up an entirely new, an entirely new segment of reality. My goodness, there is evil out there. I saw it with the Parkettes. There's evil. There's demons. And people can get hurt by them. The Warrens themselves tell a lot of stories where, they had, let's say, physical altercations with the other side. So it seems to me that I've been talking for about an hour. And I wanted to keep these episodes to be an hour. I'm hoping you're liking it. I'm not sure exactly where I'm going to put this. I mean, it'll be in the archives, it'll be in the podcast, it'll be on Rumble. I really want to get to a point where if you can go to the Rumble, because you can make comments underneath it. And I would really like to hear from you. Now you're just going to have, me talk, and I'm not going to be on video or anything, but I really want your feedback. And I'm working on another idea, trying to get up a kind of a interactive chat room going, and we'll see what happens with that. But I deeply appreciate you guys. I really do. I'm hoping you're going to find this interesting stuff and that it might help you in your daily life to just realize how important you are. And to realize that, hey, according to Braden, Dr. Braden, we all have those potentials for psychic ability. There's no genetics. Our experiences are what get us in an energy field that we can actually experience more and more and more. I suggest that you listen to the Cosmic Soup episode, the latest one, December 2nd, 25, because it'll give you a deeper appreciation for the fact that, oh, we all can do these things. It's another question whether you want to or not, but the potential for it being there is there. You don't need a talent. It's God-given right. So I'm going to sign off now. When the girls can do the show, see if you try to help them out. If you know somebody that's having a problem, maybe you want to turn them their way, specifically Jan, for one-to-one guidance. And with Ani, she has so many different offerings. She's going to be on Metaphysical Martini, but it's going to be every 3 weeks, not every two. And her website, aniavedisium.com. There's so many things that she's already offers that it's easy to sign up. And yeah, you pay her a little bit, but that's how she's making her living. And the more you guys pay her, the less she has to work and the more she can spend on coming back to say what. But pray for both of them that things get easier. And who knows? They were the ones that suggested that I write this book. So maybe they manifested this whole thing. Appreciate you all. Be safe. I'll see you next time.
Say what? Say what radio show? With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.